It's Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Each and every Friday, we get in touch with Ben Standig at the top of the hour on our noon hour, and he's good enough to join us now from Ashburn and training camp. And Ben, there is a couple of things I want to talk about training camp today, but before we get there, new kickoff rules in action last night in the Hall of Fame game. How much of the game did you get to see, and what did you think of the new kickoff formation?
Hey, what's up, Ben? I only actually really saw like one highlight on social media, and it looks really weird. It's looked odd, you know, watching in practice as they're trying to figure out, you know, how to attack it. And it's such a unique circumstance, and you know, you can really see it's pretty rare. Yeah, we may see on offense or defense, you know, trying out some new formations or whatever, but you know, in general, it's all kind of the same deal. But here, it is really going to the lab and starting from scratch. So it's going to be really interesting. What did you think of it? What was the sort of general consensus of what people thought?
So I've been a big proponent of this new kickoff, and what I saw, at least in the first two, and this will, you know, parlay right back into a question for you in terms of personnel. I think you cannot have a DB on the blocking set unless that DB is just a hell of a blocker. I think you need to use running backs, linebackers, tight ends, wide receivers. In the close quarter situations, you really prioritize legitimate blocking that could potentially, you know, seal an edge, open something up. So my question to you would be, just based on what you've seen in camp, and I know they're not giving you everything, but what is the personnel that they're using on returns? Is it heavy defensive backs, or are they utilizing some tight ends, some linebackers, and maybe some receivers?
I think it's a combination of things. One, as you've heard Dan Quinn say many times by now, you know, they are trying to figure out what each player can do so they can maximize their assets. So they really have shown all kinds of different people at these spots. So it's, you know, maybe a little hard to say exactly, but yeah, to your point, you know, all of a sudden, instead of that, the returner being maybe that sort of, squirty type of receiver, you know, shifty, all that, it may be more of a stocky running back. And I think it kind of goes from there where, I think you're right. Having a smaller defensive back may not work as well. Yeah. First thing I thought of when you said that, though, was like Jeremy Reeves, who's obviously been, you know, he's made his career here on special teams. How does it affect a guy like that? That'll be kind of interesting to see. But I think when we get to these final roster decisions, absolutely every year, the last, you know, handful of spots come down to who can play special teams. And this year, maybe we find a new dynamic as far as like the main positions and how many are kept because of what you're talking about.
You know, we had a caller chime in and ask about Chris Rodriguez, because in some of the names that I mentioned with the kickoff, you know, is Pringle, it's Crowder, it's largely wide receivers, but we know that Chris Rodriguez handled some of those responsibilities. What has his role been like in camp with the addition of Austin Ekeler? Is he in that running back rotation, or have you seen him working mostly with special teams?
I think it's one of the weirder developments of camp. I was saying, you know, way back whenever this rule started to come out and we started trying to figure out, you know, who's on this team, I'm like, Chris Rodriguez seems like the ideal guy. He's got, a squatter kind of body, and he can run. You know, he's not, you know, a burner, but he's got some decent enough speed. And it does feel like with these, you know, tighter space scenarios, a running back is gonna be a good fit. He has not been back there at all, going back to minicamp, OTAs, and now. And it's not like they're rotating like one or two guys. They're rotating like 10 guys on kickoffs and punts and whatever. So it's very odd to me what is happening there. I had a story up today on The Athletic of like seven questions after seven practices. And, you know, one of them was like, how many guys from the Ron Rivera era are going to be around? And I said, look, I think there's a reasonable chance of a few guys even from last year are in some trouble. And I think Rodriguez is more, you know, maybe he ultimately makes the team, but he's more bubble, I think, than I would have bet, you know, a few months ago.
I would imagine one of the other guys that has been talked about a lot at practice, although Dan Quinn hasn't talked about a ton, is Jamin Davis. Where is he working? Is he mostly working with edge rushers, or is he getting kind of that edge rusher and also middle linebacker work?
Yeah, so back in the spring, he was working pretty much at linebacker. Since they've been in training camp, he's pretty much been working at edge. He'll still get in some linebacker work. Dan Quinn said this was sort of the plan to get a feel for him at both spots, at multiple spots. And also, look, I think realistically in the case of Davis, you know, the linebacker thing has only worked out to a degree. It always, you know, you always thought, like, with his athleticism and size, maybe, you know, why not give him a shot at going after the quarterback more? Never really happened. They're trying to do that here. But when you have to learn a whole new position against other, you know, other guys who are already, you know, established, even if they've only, you know, been doing it in college for several years, it's still more than him. So he's been struggling from what I can see, you know, in that adjustment going up against, like today I watched, he had a couple of times going against Brandon Coleman and really didn't kind of go anywhere. So, you know, they may decide, hey, he's too interesting of an athletic presence to not try to experiment, work something out in season. But between the fact he's not played special teams a lot in his career as a starter and the transition, I don't know. I think he's another guy that very much is on the bubble and maybe on the wrong side, unless, like I said, special teams kind of show he can find a hole there and find a way to stay.
Do you think it'll be one of those things where we're late in preseason games, like third or fourth quarter, and he's still out there getting reps at the edge just so he can kind of get comfortable and get those under his belt?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we don't know how much, you know, Dan, we're learning so much about Dan Quinn and what he's going to do. I don't, you know, we'll have to see how much he's going to be willing to play starters at all. But obviously, you know, in probably at least two of these games, you think the deep backups are going to go play a fair amount. So yeah, it's never typically a great look, especially if you're an established player playing deep into the second half of a preseason game, but this will be an exception because of what we're talking about. He's learning a new spot. So hopefully he can make enough strides for himself to justify sticking around. But this, and by the way, this also goes to the point of what you were talking about before. You know, what I might view as how many linebackers or defensive ends they might keep could be very different in their head because of, say, the kickoff rule. You know, they want certain body types, certain positions out there. So, you know, maybe that's a way to get saved. But right now, you know, like I said, it feels like more of an uphill struggle than probably some people think.
Ben Standing, our guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show, Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You can read his work on The Athletic, of course, find his podcast, Standing Room Only, wherever you get your podcast, and follow him on Twitter, at Ben Standing. So, Ben, I know that Dan Quinn said they were going to be working on late-game scenarios today in practice. What did you see from these scenarios? How did everybody look?
Everything looked fine. Look, can I be really honest with you, Denton? If today was the eighth practice, everything's starting to blend together. I feel like I've seen everything 100 times. They did a couple practices late where they, you know, had the teams drive, you know, down the field, and I don't think they really got too far. Both of the kickers both kicked like once from like over 50, so I don't really think it was. I could be mistaken, but I don't really know how much that late game stuff really was a factor. The one thing they did today, though, that was, and they did it yesterday also, is one-on-one battles, receiver, cornerback, offensive line, defensive line. Some of that is definitely interesting. It's probably overstating to say so-and-so won this rep and not, but, you know, you see some things, you see the competitiveness. You know, Mike Sanders still, the cornerback, has been mentioned a lot by Dan Quinn in training camp so far. And he, you know, I think today again, just showed he's like, maybe he doesn't make every single play, but he is like right there. He is fighting through everything to make a play that continues to stand out. Bryson Tremaine, in terms of receivers, you know, feels like every day in practice, he somehow gets the ball down the field. He had one late today in practice. So, some of the other parts of the practice today stood out to me more than the late game, to be honest.
You know, it's funny because I was listening to Quinn this morning and he talked about, I can't remember who asked him the question, but he was talking about how he loves these because it gets to help him work on like timeout usage down there. So because they didn't really get towards the end zone, did he not get to practice his timeout usage in late game scenarios today?
I didn't notice it. You know, it, you know, for those, if you haven't been out to practice, like depending on where you're standing on the field, there's a constant, you know, in and out of players coming off the sideline, and there can be stoppages for all kinds of reasons. I don't know. You can't always tell if it's a timeout or just taking a water break or whatever. So I didn't notice that Dan Quinn was doing that, but yeah, I mean, you know, look, this is, that's going to be a really important element. They hired Dave Gardy, who was a longtime executive with the NFL office, who was in charge. He was like sort of in charge of operations. He was the guy that teams would go to, including, you know, game day operations. And so he's going to be the guy up in the booth who's going to help them with, you know, some of these decisions they have to make with, you know, replay timeouts, all that. So, you know, it's a new crew, obviously, so they're going to have to practice. The preseason game coming up will allow them to do that. I wonder if that'll be part of the joint practice, either the Jets or the Dolphins or both. But certainly, you know, it's a part they've got to work on. And this is where the coach has to try to figure out what to do as well.
I would imagine it's too early to fully get this answer, but the expectation right now is that Jaden Daniels is going to play at least some in the preseason, right? I know Joe Theismann was on the network a couple of weeks ago saying he doesn't think Jaden should play any. Has there been any indication that he won't play in the preseason?
We haven't gotten that far with Quinn. I imagine Sunday might be the time to start doing that because now it works sort of, you know, into the week of the second game. We really haven't asked about that yet. I understand where Joe Theismann's coming from that perspective, but I think he's got to play. You know, maybe it's not a lot. Maybe it's just the second game is the one where he either, you know, gets more extended work rather than just a little bit. But, you know, I think you have to get him out there some. I mean, it is football. It's a contact sport. You're good, you know, what are you going to do? But, you know, because it's not just him, it's the whole offense. You know, this is why it may be just, if you can have a successful series, it might be just one series. Maybe you have to go two, you know, if you think it, but it's not a lot. But, you know, get your feet wet, let him get the feel for the rhythm of the game. I think all that is important. So just imagine he plays at least a little in the first and maybe more in the second, and then probably skips the third.
Couple more for Ben Standing here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You know, there was a lot made of of Emmanuel Forbes again in the early portions of camp. Ben, now that the pads have come on, is he still excelling the way that I was led to believe he was in the first week of camp, or does that kind of come back down to earth a little bit?
You know, the a lot of these drills, you know, favor the receivers, right? When they're going one-on-one, and I know we make it feels like it's a basketball kind of a play, but obviously a cornerback is going to have help, you know, whether it's deep with a safety or you know, there's a pass rush coming at the quarterback who's got to get rid of it, whatever it might be. And here, there's none of that. So it's just purely a one-on-one. And, you know, at times, all the defensive backs are going to get beat. I think Forbes has had his moments where you can see, I think, some improvement, like when he's at the line of scrimmage in terms of, you know, not getting, you know, sort of run over, I guess, to a certain extent. He's not getting bullied maybe as much. But, look, it's still a work in progress. There was a play, it was in the 11s yesterday, where Terry just beat him immediately off the line of scrimmage and went straight down the field. Daniels hit him for a bomb for a touchdown. You know, I've been an open mind about the idea that he starts or you know, that I'm not opposed to that or not thinking, you know, I think that's possible. And I still do because he's got the most upside, I would probably say, of the corners. But, you know, St. Juste and Davis is the safer combo, and that would be my guess right now. But, you know, I'm not ruling out Forbes yet. There's, you know, him with this staff, with the way they want to be, with the aggressive approach, I think can go a long way to help him because of the fact that, you know, we know what he did in college with returning these interceptions. And then simultaneously, he, I just think that, you know, he's got, you know, with this staff, I just think it's a good fit. So hopefully he can work it out, but, you know, we'll see.
What about, I remember there was at least some semblance of the fan base that was excited when they bring in Noah I, former late first-round pick out of Auburn, yeah, with Miami and then played in Dallas, obviously, with Dan Quinn and Joe Witt. Have you seen anything from him that you've taken away and that I would say is memorable at least?
I don't know about memorable. You know, I just kind of in my head put him down as like one of the six that I would make it. You know, a little bit of a veteran. He's been around a few years. He was with Quinn and Joe Witt in Dallas. You know, obviously Forbes is only a second-year player. You know, Sanders still the rookie. St. Juice is only in his fourth year. You know, it's not a very experienced group. So, you know, I think you want some guys who've been around a bit. And then you look at the guys, the other corners, and they're all pretty young too. So I think he's got a chance. Again, special teams will be a big factor. But the way I look at the corner, there's the top four, the ones I mentioned earlier, and then there's about, I don't know, however many are left, five or six guys in that next group who I think it's possible they eventually, one of them maybe eventually joins that top four. But for now, they're going to have to, like, show more. And I think he's in that second group, but probably I would say towards the top of it because of that experience.
When you look at the offense and receivers, obviously Terry is number one. Is it fair right now to pencil in that Jahan Dotson is number two, and then McCaffrey and Brown are competing for number three? Or do you still think there is some sort of competitive spot for that number two wide receiver?
I think Dotson's at two. You know, when he's on, you know, it looks pretty good. When he's really crisp with his routes, he's got good hands. He can, you know, he's definitely in these one-on-ones, you know, been able to get open pretty consistently against these guys. But he's also had sort of an up-and-down camp, some drops. So I think he's the two, but hopefully he can, you know, tighten some things up before they get to, the games. The third receiver, I think, is sort of interesting. Like, I think at the beginning of camp, we're all saying, okay, Luke McCaffrey, he's got more size a little bit than say, McLaurin and Dotson. The room doesn't have a ton in general. Put him out there as a third and move on. I think Zacchaeus, one of the free agents that they have signed, he has looked very good in camp. He's had some decent years in the NFL with seasons of 30-plus catches. He is very quick, very fast, has shown the ability to make those toe-tapping catches on the sideline. He, to me, is no less than the fourth and maybe even the third guy, except for the fact that he's like 5'8", so that's even smaller than Dotson. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's going to work in every scenario. De'Ami Brown, Dan Quinn has said a lot of nice things about De'Ami over the last few days, about his work habits, how he every practice play seems to just run hard throughout the whole play, even when he knows it's not coming his way or if the play breaks down. So I feel like De'Ami's got a pretty good shot to stay, but I don't know where he fits into the receiver rotation. So if that's the top five, he's probably fifth. But McCaffrey, let's see where this goes over the next few weeks into the preseason games. He's looked okay in practice. He just hasn't completely popped yet the way Zacchaeus has.
Ben, I'll get you out of here on this with a little bit of conversation about the third and fourth string quarterbacks, which I'm sure is what everybody desires. We know that Jaden and Mariota are splitting reps. Who is getting more reps between Driscoll and Hartman? Is it definitively Driscoll, or they seem to be splitting as well?
Driscoll is typically going third in the order, followed by Hartman. I think it's sort of a three-pronged question. One, do they want to keep three quarterbacks? Do they feel that's compelling? How they view the emergency quarterback role, where you can elevate a guy, but for an emergency quarterback, but either has to be on the 53 or on the practice squad. How they look at that will be interesting. Driscoll is more of a break glass in case of emergency guy. He started at least one game in five of his six seasons. I'm sure if he's released, he'd be on the short list for teams if they need a backup. But, there's also a reason why he's bounced around the league. There's not a upside there. So it's not exciting, but he's, a veteran who knows how to play. And Hartman, it's purely, I don't think he's going to be a guy you want to consider on any level for this year. But is he possibly your QB2 next year, right? He and Daniels are the only quarterbacks under contract. So Hartman, I would imagine, stays one way or the other. If you think you can put him on the practice squad, probably can. Then that may be the safe way to go with him. So I give him the better odds of staying than Driscoll, but it all depends on, do they value having experience at that third quarterback spot? I don't know that they do, but I would say it's Hartman over Driscoll unless they lean towards experience and then hope that Hartman can get to the practice squad.
Was there anything made? This is the final thing. Was there anything made about the fact that Sam Hartman, like 3 weeks ago, was drafted in the UFL? They're not worried he's going to go run off into Birmingham, are they?
I don't think so. Really, that's a good question. It really hasn't come up. I can't imagine that that's a thing. Like, you know, as long as he's attached to this team, I don't think that's going to, you know, even if you're on the practice squad, that's, you know, still a step closer to the league than the UFL is. So I think he's here, you know, until, you know, for the long haul. Even if, you know, somehow he got let go, I would imagine, you know, some teams out there would want to take a look. And, you know, look, I think he's had some good moments in camp. He's obviously going up against the third and fourth string, so factor that in. But, you know, you're more of a college football guy than I, but, you know, I know he had a good career. He also went undrafted. That says something if you're a quarterback. But, you know, if he can develop into a guy that they think could ultimately be the primary backup for Daniels, I mean, that is definitely an investment worth making. So I'm sure they would love to keep that going, whether he's on the active squad or not.
Ben, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the weekend. I'll see you out there on Sunday.
Oh, awesome, man. Cool. I'll see you then.
That is Ben Standing, good enough to join us each and every Friday. You can read his work at The Athletic and listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only. Find him on Twitter, at Ben Standing. The Sam Hartman thing is like kind of tongue-in-cheek because he was drafted a couple of weeks ago by the Birmingham, whatever the UFL Birmingham franchise is called. I don't think it's the Bulls. I don't really care what it is, to be honest. But I just thought it was funny that he was literally starting training camp in a week and he got drafted in the UFL. He's obviously not going to
leave. Stallions, by the way.
The Stallions, thank you. I knew it was some sort of wildebeest or like a horse of some kind. But he's not going to leave the NFL for the UFL unless things really don't go well. I just found that to be, it hasn't been brought up, I don't think. I don't think Dan Quinn's spoken, you know, anything about that because I think they kind of realize he's not going to go play in the UFL. I don't even know if Sam Hartman, I'd be curious to know if Sam Hartman knew that his name was in the UFL draft, because I was told a story 2 years ago that a guy who played in a Big Ten college was drafted by, at the time, the XFL or the USFL, whichever one of the leagues was, and he had no knowledge, like he was playing Call of Duty, and his agent called him and said, you have just been drafted, and he said, cool, hung up, and then went back to playing Call of Duty. Like, just zero knowledge that he was even in the draft, or he was eligible to be drafted. I would imagine that Sam Hartman is similar to that. Although, who knows? Maybe he wants to play in the UFL.
What if you played in both? Like, did like a Deion Sanders kind of thing, but in both leagues?
I mean, you can do it. PJ Washington did that. He made a name in the XFL and then got signed by the Carolina Panthers. Then I believe he played that year. So that is, like, it's funny, Chris, but that is something that can actually happen.
Who, Maurice the Rocket Richard had played in the Canadian League, I think, a little bit, and then he ended up in the NFL for a little while. He wasn't a star like he was in college, but
yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I just don't think Sam Hartman is going to, I don't think he's going to play in the UFL. All right, coming up next, a special edition of Denton's Daily News, and then we'll get you set for Doc Walker. He's going to take over at the top of the hour. That comes your way when we get back. It's Kevin Sheehan Show, Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980, team980.com, and the Odyssey app.